Coming up tomorrow, it is the Army-Navy game in Philadelphia. We talked to Chris Spatola earlier, and I've talked about this before. Part of me would love to see a one-off, and they haven't done this in a long time, where they each use their campuses for a year. Mikey Stadium in West Point, New York, is one of the absolute most beautiful settings in all of sport, not just college football. Annapolis is one of the most beautiful towns ever. I've spent many a time in Annapolis, having gone to the University of Maryland, and I'm sure John Feinstein has spent some time in Annapolis. He also wrote the book, A Civil War, A Year Inside the Army-Navy Game. I appreciate your time, sir. This is a big game. I know it's a big game for you. It warms your heart. Tell me what you love most about this game.
First of all, they did play in Mikey Stadium 2 years ago, Adam.
Did they?
During the pandemic.
Right, during the pandemic.
And it was really a disaster because it wasn't just cold, obviously cold in December, but it was incredibly foggy. The TV announcers couldn't even see the field for large chunks of the game, and Army ended up winning 15-0. And the Navy people will tell you they don't even count that game. When they're adding up the rivalry, that game didn't count.
That's right. The only people in the stands were the cadets, and there were no middies there, were there?
No middies were there, and Trump came, still trying to convince people he'd won the election. And at the end of the first quarter, you know, the tradition is that the president changes sides of the field at halftime. He goes from the Army side to the Navy side or vice versa. And Trump told the people he wanted to change sides at the end of the first quarter.
Okay.
Because he wanted to change sides, wave, get his publicity, and then get out of
Then leave. Okay.
And they said, no, that's not the way we do it. We do it at halftime. So he just left. much to everyone's relief, I suspect. But I always tell people this Army-Navy is my Christmas. I've been going since 1990. It doesn't, you know, I have strong feelings for both sides, for the players and coaches on both sides. When my son Danny was younger, he would say to me, Dad, who do we root for in the Army-Navy game? And I would say, whomever's losing. And that hasn't changed much. And I think my feelings about Army-Navy, because it's one of those events that unless you've actually been there, you can't understand how unique it is. From the march-ons to, you know, I'm not a big national anthem guy, to be honest with you. I don't think it's a very good song musically. but beyond that, I think it would be more special if we only played it on occasions rather than at every single event. But when they play the national anthem, I'm starting to choke up. When they play the national anthem at Army-Navy and you see 8,000 hands, 4,000 cadets, 4,000 midshipmen snap to salute position, choke up every time. And then the game is, you know, played with remarkable fervor. No matter what the team's records are, they both have losing records this year. Doesn't matter.
Right.
And then when they play the alma maters at the end of the game, and I'm always on the field for the alma maters, my wife always sends me a text, and it says, "Are you crying yet?" And the answer is always yes. It's always yes because it's just there's no moment quite like that in sports. I'm not knocking any other rivalries. You know, I don't believe you have to say, well, Duke Carolina's better or Ohio State, Michigan. I'm not knocking any of those rivalries. They're great rivalries. But Army-Navy is different because of what the young men are, are going to go on and do when they graduate. And because there is a unique bond there among the players from Army and Navy. It doesn't come out during the game, but it comes out in the years after.
John Feinstein is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. We'll have the Army-Navy game, by the way, on the radio here on 99.9 The Fan in Raleigh coming up. When you said different, I'm not saying the outcome doesn't matter. It matters greatly to the players and the coaches and the two institutions and all of that. So I'm not going to diminish it in that regard. But the outcome is, I mean, Chris Spatola, who was on with us earlier, really, he's an Army guy, as you know.
And I know very well.
he just called it, he says it's a celebration. is what it is more than anything else. And I would almost not even put it in the rivalry category because it rarely settles anything. They're not in the same league. It's been, 70 years almost since these two teams were competing at the top of the sport. They used to, or at least Army did.
I'm going to take you back 60 to Roger Staubach's team.
Okay. In the early 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been that long since somebody was competing at the top of the sport. But it's right. So his term, using it as a celebration, you've gotten close to the coaches. Regard as well. What strikes you about, is there a similarity among those men?
Well, there is, because if they don't know before they get there that coaching at an academy is different than coaching anywhere else, they figure it out pretty quickly. I think the best line I ever heard on the academies was from Fred Goldsmith, who was an assistant at Air Force, and then, of course, as you remember, coached at Duke. Yep. And Fred said to me, The difference is, at a civilian school, the hardest part of a player's day is practice. And then academy, the easiest part of a player's day is practice. And I witnessed it up close when I did a Civil War. I was at somebody's practice every day. I was in the locker room during the game. I think, Adam, that I am the only non-president of the United States who had access to both locker rooms before and during an Army-Navy game. I'm pretty proud of that. It was actually quite cool. But you feel, I've been around a lot of athletes. I've been in a lot of locker rooms. The emotions that you feel before, during, and after that game are just not like anywhere else. I mean, I've been in the locker room at Duke Carolina games, mm-hmm. and basketball, because they actually matter.
oh, man.
And I felt the emotion, but it's not like an Army-Navy game, especially in a year like this and in a year like 1995 when I did a Civil War where neither team was going to a bowl. And the seniors all know it's their last football mm-hmm. game. Maybe one, two might someday play in the pros. Army has a kid named Andre Carter who people are saying is going to be a high draft pick. We'll see. But for the most part, there's finality to it. That's what Ken Niumatalolo said to me this week. There's such finality to it. And I was in the Army locker room after they won a classic game, 14-13, the year I did the book. And the players were all crying. And it wasn't so much tears of joy because they won. It was tears because they knew football was over. They knew it was over, that they had to go on with their lives, that a major chapter in their lives had just closed. And when you're on that field after the game and you listen to the playing of the alma maters, you see the players hugging one another, it's a remarkable sight. It really is.
John Feinstein is joining us, the Army-Navy game coming up tomorrow. This is something that fascinates me, is that these guys are all obviously great athletes.
Yes.
I mean, they played high school football and were good enough to be recruited. When you accept the offer of a scholarship, of just admittance, which to West Point or to Annapolis, you do so with the full understanding that, barring something really, really strange, Napoleon McCallum,
right.
you're playing right. for four years and then that's it.
That's it. Yes.
That's it. So these guys know going in. Is there a common thread about that struck you when you were doing the book?
Well, that they understand it. That when they take that uniform off, 99% of them, or 99.9% of them, are done with organized football. And like Kenny Montalolo said, the chapter is over. The football chapter in their lives is over. They may coach someday. They may have kids who play, but they're not going to play at that level. And, people, there's a tendency to put, Army, Navy, they don't compete for national titles anymore. Well, Navy's beaten Notre Dame four times in recent years. And there's no way Navy should ever beat Notre Dame. Notre Dame's got every possible advantage mm-hmm. you can have as a football school. And Navy's got every possible disadvantage because, like you say, coaches are sitting in the room and somebody says, well, what's the military commitment when we graduate? 5 years. 5 years mm-hmm. if you graduate. And most players who have any chance to play in the NFL are going to run screaming from the room at that point. And yet, Navy has beaten Notre Dame. Navy has competed for the America Athletic Conference title. That's a good conference.
Mm-hmm.
Won't be as good next year, but it's a good conference. And Army has had some tremendous wins. They beat Missouri in a bowl game a couple years back. And that just shouldn't happen, Adam. But the kids are so competitive, and they work so hard, and they outsmart their opponents a lot because they're always smaller than the opposition. And they beat them with their minds and their hearts. And that sounds like a cliche or corny, but it's true. It just happens to be true.
Yeah, also the styles that both teams play lends itself to being a little bit weird based for the most part. Over the last, say, 25 or so years, maybe even longer, there's been a lot of triple option there. But look, it is very cool, and it is an incredible scene. I wanted to get one more thing in before I let John Feinstein go. I think the last time, I know you were down here recently for Duke, and I'll ask you something about the first year of John Shire in a second, but I wanted to ask you one thing about golf. Because I want to go back to July at the Open Championship, and I believe you and I texted going into the final round or was on Sunday.
Yeah, it was
Sunday.
Going into Sunday, right.
And you and I both have, I don't think I reach your levels of appreciation for Rory McIlroy.
Man crush?
Yeah. Yes, we certainly have to, we might have to worry about the, keep John out of the locker room. When Rory's in there, do you think he just wanted it too badly and that he couldn't kind of relax on Sunday?
I think he did. You know, what shows up first when a player's nerves are bothering him? Putting.
Yeah.
He hit the ball great and had all sorts of makeable putts and made none of them coming down the stretch. Not one or two, none. Lost by two strokes to Cam Smith, who played a great final.
He was tremendous.
Round, 64, the last day of a major. But the Rory's problem right now, quote unquote, he's the number one player in the world, so his problems aren't that bad.
No.
But he wants the next major.
This holiday season, Peloton's got a gift for you. Right now, get up to $200 off accessories with the purchase of a Peloton Tread. Accessories like non-slip grip resistance bands, a heart rate monitor, yoga blocks, and more. Take your workout to the next level with Peloton, motivation that moves you. Hurry, this limited time offer ends December 25th. Visit onepeloton.com to learn more. All access membership separate. Offer ends December 25th. Cannot be combined with other offers. See additional terms at onepeloton.com.
Because it's been 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
So bad. And he's not one of these guys who's going to say, well, I've won four majors. I'm going to the Hall of Fame. I'm rich. It's okay. That's not Rory. And the white whale, of course, is the Masters. And I have said that the way for him to win the Masters is to get about an 8-shot lead on Sunday so that there's no pressure coming down the stretch. And, you know, there are guys that's the way they do win their first majors, but he's won four, of course. Yeah, and maybe he didn't get it done because I wanted it too much. I don't know. And nothing against Cam Smith, who played a great round of golf. But I really wanted Rory to win very much.
Yeah.
And by the way, can I get have I told you the story about why my man crush is so strong? It goes back to an incident in North Carolina.
Oh, yeah, let's hear it.
I brought my wife and then 3-year-old daughter to Pinehurst in 2014 for the Open.
Yep.
And we were in the little pub off the lobby at the Carolina Inn. And Rory and his dad, Jerry, came in. And, of course, it was packed.
Yeah.
And, you know, the manager's freaking out. Like, here's Rory McIlroy. I haven't got a table. And Jerry McIlroy, being who he is, just said, don't worry about it. We'll go wait in the lobby. When you have a table, come and get us. Well, Rory came over to the table to say hello. And I introduced him to my wife, Christine, and to Jane, who, like I said, was 3 at the time. And Rory walked around the table, got down on one knee so he could be at Jane's eye level. And he said, so, Jane, what did you do today? And Jane said, oh, we went swimming and we went into town and my mommy brought me a great new dress and I really had a wonderful time. And Rory said, geez, I wish I'd been with you because he'd shot one over par that day. So I wish I'd been with you. And Jane, of course, says, well, you can come with us tomorrow. And Rory said, you know, I just might do that. And when he walked away, I had for years said that I wanted my older daughter, Bridget, to marry Rory so he could be my son-in-law. So, and at that point, of course, Rory was married. And I said, so maybe 20 years from now, Rory gets his divorce and Jane's a little older. And Chris said, the hell with that. I'll marry him.
He's a great guy. And he's a
genuinely good guy.
He's had a year that has put him back on the path to win majors.
I think so too.
And because I think he was energized by the split between the PGA Tour and Live Golf.
And before that, by the Ryder Cup and how poorly he played.
100%. You saw the emotion after he won his singles match on Sunday. Right. But I think the split between the two tours and the leadership he took and the fact that he has not been shy about saying why the PGA Tour is where he feels like he belongs and he doesn't like it, and his public feud with Greg Norman, which I am here for, because it's needed to be. I think a lot of these things have needed to be said, but I think if he wins one, he's going to win a lot more than just the one.
I hope you're right. He's 33, which is the same age Phil Mickelson was when he won his first, and a year younger than Ben Hogan was when he won his first. And I think your point about LIV is very important. I just wrote a column in the Washington Post saying he should be the sports person of the year. No knock on Stephen Curry, who I love, but because of all the things he did away from the golf course, in addition to winning the 2-year-long championships on the golf course, I said he should be sportsman of the year. And that may reflect a little bit of bias on my part.
Maybe.
But doesn't mean
you're wrong.
I'm not the only one who feels that way.
Yeah. You might be biased, but it doesn't mean you're wrong. At Jay Feinstein Books on Twitter. And if you have a 10, 11, 12, 13-year-old that struggles finding something good to read, pick up any one of John's books for kids, which are all awesome. I appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah to you and yours. And I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. And if I don't talk to you, have great holidays. Thanks for having me.
Take care. John Feinstein, the one and only. A civil war about Army-Navy.
This holiday season, Peloton's got a gift for you. Right now, get up to $200 off accessories with the purchase of a Peloton Tread. Accessories like non-slip grip resistance bands, a heart rate monitor, yoga blocks, and more. Take your workout to the next level with Peloton, motivation that moves you. Hurry, this limited time offer ends December 25th. Visit onepeloton.com to learn more. All access membership separate. Offer ends December 25th. Cannot be combined with other offers. See additional terms at onepeloton.com.